This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly entertainment podcast with a new episode available each week at thehollywoodoutsider.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite app. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'm going to be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider, because this week we are going to do what we do on occasion, where we bring you interviews with filmmakers to give you an insight into what goes into getting their projects made, as well as insight into the respective art itself. This episode, I am speaking with Andrew Marlowe and Terry Miller, the former showrunners of Castle and creators of ABC's latest murder mystery, Take Two, which is a really fun show. I hope you guys check this out. And just so you know a little bit about what it is, Take Two stars Rachel Bilson as Sam Swift. She's a disgraced actress who is struggling to rebuild her career. She's researching a role for a new project when she starts shadowing private detective Eddie Valetic, who's played by Eddie Cibrian. And eventually, she kind of finds out that her history as a TV cop might just actually be used for some good. So in the spirit of The Thin Man and Moonlighting, Moonlighting would be one of my favorite all-time TV shows, these two team up to solve crimes every week on ABC. They even have a nice little Maddie and David nod in one of the episodes, which is pretty fun. So for this exclusive interview, creators Andrew Marlowe and Terry Miller join me to talk about their history in Hollywood, dish a little bit on their time on Castle, Take Two, and why they love doing shows like this. We also dive a bit into serialized TV versus procedurals and a lot more. And it's wonderful to talk to these two because they complement each other so well. And I refer to that while we're doing the interview. But if you notice as we go, they just completely finish each other's sentences. It's actually pretty fun to listen to, and they're wonderful people to hear. So please remember, this is a phone interview. They are doing this remotely. So of course, you know, audio isn't optimal, but it's a really interesting interview. These are two of the nicest people I've talked to in Tinseltown. And I really hope, if you haven't already, check out Take Two Thursday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central on ABC. You can also catch up on the show on abc.com or on Hulu. But right now, let's just jump into my interview with Take Two creators, Andrew Marlowe and Terry Miller. Well, I'm here with Andrew and Terry. Both of you guys are, where are you at right now today?
We are in our office in LA.
Okay. So the first question I always ask of every interview is the same one. I always want to know, when did you each know you wanted to get involved in filmmaking? Was there a specific moment? When did you decide this is what you wanted to do?
I'll go first. I was in college and I took a course called The Maniacs, The Monster, and The Martian. It was a course in horror films and genre films. And for the end of the class, we had to write a screenplay, adapt something. And I sat down to do it, and it was one of those moments where you start to do something and time disappears, and you get into flow. And I realized I love this. I love doing this. I always wanted to write, but it really put me on a filmmaking trajectory at that point in, you know, one of my early years in college. But I've always written and loved to make things creatively in three dimensions. So that's where I started.
I got started a little younger than that. I was kind of a child of the movies. I was 9 years old when I saw Star Wars for the first time, and it really instilled me with this sense of wonder, and that sense of wonder was something that I wanted to give to other people as I got older. But also, my parents had something that they called movie night, and this was just before videotapes were coming out, where they'd check out a famous movie from the local library system, and they had a 16-millimeter projector, and they would invite their friends over, a bunch of academics, and they'd show the first reel of the film, and they'd all have wine and cheese, and the second reel of the film, have coffee and dessert, and then show the final reel. And so I saw Preston Sturges and Ingmar Bergman films. I saw Abel Gance's Napoleon in my living room. So I got a real film education growing up, and my parents did that earliest I remember. I think I was 5 or 6 years old, and I would sneak into the room and watch the movies with them. And I know, you know, in this generation, it's not really remarkable because you can get anything you want on demand on any of the streaming services, it seems. But in that day and age, you know, to be able to sit down at a young age and watch these movies with these academics, and they'd all talk about them, it really was the thing that forged my love for film. And then later television, that kind of visual storytelling when I was quite young.
And have you both been, I assume, writers your entire lives?
I've done a number of things, but I think that essentially in my soul and in my heart, I am a writer, first and foremost. But I love all the other aspects of filmmaking. My first love was books, and I read voraciously as a kid. And when I grew up, I wanted to be somebody who wrote books and made people feel the same way, other people feel the same way that I felt when I was reading, which was transported to magical worlds.
And I'd always had an affinity for storytelling. At college, I was an English major and a philosophy minor. While my other friends were pre-law and pre-med, I was pre-unemployment. but I did some PA work in New York City and then ultimately applied to USC to their graduate screenwriting program and got my MFA in screenwriting. And that's what kind of launched my career from there.
I mean, you kind of talked about it a little bit. Where did you both get your big break in Hollywood?
We actually got our big break in Hollywood at the same time that we met.
Oh.
Both Terry and I won the Nickel Fellowship through the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences for emerging screenwriters. And we didn't know each other at the time, and we and the other winners met in an Academy boardroom.
There are about four or five winners a year, and it's the greatest screenwriting
competition. Fellowship.
Yeah.
That's out there.
It's out there.
And we were both very lucky that year.
And it launched us, and it launched us.
Yeah.
The best part of that entire explanation was how you each finished each other's sentences flawlessly.
Sometimes it's flawless, and sometimes we fight about how we finish each other's sentences, but I think that that's part of any creative partnership. Sometimes the best comes out of the friction.
Well, Andrew, one thing that stood out to me, you're looking through your filmography, is you wrote three movies I probably watched more times than I care to admit. You wrote Hollow Man, End of Days, and Air Force One. You know, get off my plane. Those are three really solid projects. I want to know what prompted you to pull away from film and dedicate to yourself to television a little bit.
Well, I wanted to do something new. I wanted to have a different kind of challenge. And also when you're writing a feature film, the best case scenario from having the idea to seeing it on screen is kind of 2 years, and that's if you get really lucky. So you work really hard for a long period of time, and you sort of have a weekend at the box office, and then it kind of goes away for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know, the film sustains, but the interesting thing about television and being able to do multiple seasons is that you can have this extended conversation with the culture, and you really can take your time with the characters, and you can arc them over a period of time, and you can get down a little bit more into the nitty-gritty. So it seemed like a different challenge, and it was at a point in my career where I had done a lot of stuff, and I was getting a lot of rewrites, and I was a little burned out on the action movie stuff and wanted to try something new. And I was very fortunate that the first project that I did, Castle, caught fire and did pretty well.
Yeah, well, I just want to let you know, Hollow Man is one of my cult favorites. I remember it was a box office hit, but it's just one of those movies I've gone back to way more times than I probably should have.
Well, thank you for that. You know, we had an interesting time making it, and some people have been revisiting it recently because a lot of the subtextual conversation in there was about men and power, and in the hashtag MeToo time, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of what that movie was doing was expressing commentary about the corruption of power and how it can pervert people in difficult ways. But it's also a very cool just genre sci-fi, and we had a really good time making it.
Yeah, it works on different levels, which is why I really like it. I think some people kind of relegate it to genre, and I think there's a lot more to that one personally. Terry,
well, thank you.
And Terry, you started with Disenchanted, which is a really cool concept. It was a short film that was about therapy, unique
it
therapy.
I was working on becoming a director, and I had done a couple short films before that had been at festivals, and I'd learned from that, and I realized that the next one that I made should probably be a little bit shorter of a short film because this is one of the people really like to watch. And then I had this really fun idea because I've always loved fairy tales. I've always loved the fairy tale princesses, and I think that I was a little bit before my time on that, considering all the shows and superheroes and fairy tale princesses that have been all over the media, that it would be really fun to have the fairy tale princesses in group therapy, because fairy tales started out being cautionary tales in periods of time where tragedies were happening. It's like nursery rhymes like Ring Around the Rosie were about the plague, or, you know, having a fairy tale where the princess's hands were cut off were all metaphors for things that were going on at a time where people were catching diseases or where there were wars going on. And I thought it would be really interesting to do a modern day version of what, digging down into the fairy tale princesses and seeing what was going on in their lives now. And showing that they were really all about everyday people, that, and that every woman, every person is a hero in their own story.
I think that could have been a great series in its own right, honestly.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we got to stop by Castle on the way to Take Two. I don't think there's any way you can get around that kind of success. And to be perfectly candid, I remember when Castle came out because I was a huge Nathan Fillion fan from Firefly, and I remember there were a lot of us at the time that were just hoping it got canceled, because we were like, if it gets canceled, then he goes back, he's desperate, he has to do a Firefly again. That's just the way it's going to work. Then
outfit eventually.
Yeah, I remember that. That was great for Halloween.
Yeah.
Then we saw the show, and the show was so much fun. It was very quippy. The banter was great. The leads obviously were very charming. The concept seemed hard. Like, I didn't know how that was going to work to go on for multiple seasons, but it definitely flowed. And we had a show that really kind of bonded the characters together. It became procedural, but there's also a serialized element to it, and it just really, really clicked. But when did you guys know that, because I know it started as a mid-season show, when did you know Castle was really affecting the pop culture?
Well, it's interesting, you know, Castle's success kind of went hand in hand with the emergence of the social media conversation. So we knew when we started getting feedback from people about how much they really liked it. And we had fans that were, you know, they were just tremendous. They were really great. They really loved it. And they were very vocal about their support. In our initial season or two, we were kind of a bubble show. I think for ABC's market, a procedural is a little tougher than some of the other kinds of shows, the more soapy shows that they put on. So tapping into their viewership, I think, in the first couple seasons, was a bit of a challenge. Part of the success was that it was kind of a snowball that just took some time to grow. But I think we knew kind of by the end of season two
that
we were really getting traction.
It was really the end of season two going into three and the reactions of the fans, because up until that time we were still trying to drum up viewership, and we were grateful to the fans for evangelizing the show, because I don't think that we were getting as much publicity as we would have liked. And
yeah, we really credit, you know, the success and survival of the show to the fans telling their friends and bringing new people to the party. Our viewership for the first 5 years of the show, our viewership kept growing every year. So it just meant that more people were discovering us, and more people were telling their friends about us.
But it was a little bit about what Andrew was saying earlier, mm-hmm. about the opportunity to grow your characters and to expand their stories and the storytelling. And this gave us the opportunity to do that. And it's when we started to expand the characters and expand on their lives and bring all of the supporting characters to life that the show really took off.
And, you know, I was a little bit like you. I'm like, oh, I love Nathan Fillion. I really want to cast him in this. But if I cast him in this, how's he going to go back and do Firefly?
Yeah, I was a little nervous about that question. I'm like, well, that's truth, though. I mean, at that time, we're just like,
eh. So look, you know, Firefly was a great show. It was a little bit before its time. Mm-hmm. It probably wasn't given the support that it should have had. But there's no question it was brilliant. And Nathan was fantastic in it. But I think one of the things that you didn't see from Nathan in that were all the things he was able to bring to Castle as well. You know, that wicked sense of humor. And, you know, in Castle, he was able to really exercise every acting muscle he had. And as much as I loved him on Firefly, I was just such a huge fan of the scope of what he could do that we started writing things that, you know, would be able to tap into that skill set.
One thing that really stood out to me, and this is probably the main reason why I got so attached to the show as a fan, because I was legitimately a fan, not just as someone who's interviewing you. I was legitimately a fan of Castle. And my daughter and I would watch that every single week.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah, true story. For me personally, it was the relationship between him and his daughter, obviously, because it paralleled my own life. But did you always know the family was going to be an important aspect to the show?
Yeah, it was
very important to us to be able to have a character who could be sharp and a little bit acerbic and, you know, a little bit narcissistic and a little bit fun, but that people would judge him if they didn't see the rest of his life, if they didn't see him as the long-suffering son, you know, and you saw that some of the narcissism of the character comes out of having that stage mother who was always trying to upstage him.
And being defensive.
Yeah, and the warmth that he brought to his relationship with his daughter, all of those are really great redeeming qualities that we felt gave the show balance in a way where you could really fall in love with the character and understand all of his behavior and forgive him his flaws. Because his flaws are actually delightful, but if that's all you see, you know, you would have a skewed point of view. So what we wanted to show was all the different facets of what it means to be a man.
But also, it showed the character's enormous capacity for love. And it showed what was possible if he had a real, true, heartfelt relationship with someone. And that if he and Kate Beckett ever got together, the capacity for love between the two of them would be just lightning striking.
Was it hard for, because you guys left in season 7 as showrunners. Was it difficult for you to, I mean, if you had known season 8 was the last, would you have wanted to finish the run? Or you just felt like we've done what we could with the story and it's time to move on?
It's always challenging to leave something that you created and that you poured your heart and soul into.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always a need for the show to grow past the creator. And, you know, every show has its behind-the-scenes issues, and it just felt like at the time when we stepped off it was the right time. We thought that there was a lot more life left in the show, but the people who continued on did the best they could and, you know, made some decisions that we wouldn't have necessarily made. But I think it was hard for us to leave knowing what then happened with some of the storytelling. But we're also enormously proud of all the work we did. We had 7 amazing seasons, and the show ran for 8 years, and that's a phenomenal run in any era of TV.
That's a great run. And now with Take-Two, you guys are once again working together, and I guess, how do you make that work? Because you did it for 7 years on Castle, and now you're doing it in your new show, and you're already together. It feels like that's a lot of together. How do you guys make this work?
It is a lot of together, and we both acknowledge that.
Yeah. We're still here.
Yes, we're still here. You know, we really like each other a lot. We get along, we get along really well, and when we don't, we really say something. We're right out there with it. I don't know, I think we're really lucky. I think that's a big part of it. And what we were saying earlier about the friction sometimes makes for great storytelling, we have different sensibilities in the kind of stories that we like to tell, and we like the same things, but the differences are some of what create the fireworks and some of the turns in our stories that are really fun.
And we both have the same goal, which is to make the story as good as it can be. And so when we're challenging the material and challenging each other and challenging our writers, it's all because we just want a really fun, tight story that services the characters.
And we both push each other in different ways because different things in the storytelling tend to be important to us. So, you know, I'll push him on one portion of the story, you know, if that's not good enough. And sometimes we're the only ones that will tell each other that that's not good enough. We have to do better. And that's a really good part of our working relationship.
Does it make it in some ways in that respect easier because you can trust each other? You can be as painfully honest as you need to be. Hey, this idea is not going to work. And the other person will understand that it's not personal. It's just business. So it makes that a little easier.
Yeah, I only usually take it personally for about 24 hours. Then I get over it.
That feels right.
I think it helps that you know, we trust each other, and we know that we're always operating with the best intentions. But, you know, sometimes when you're in the thick of it, yeah, you have to take some blows, and you got to go back to your corner, and you got to think about it. So I don't know if getting notes is ever easy, but I think that we found a way to do it where it makes the material better.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that just be very serious about it. There's always love and wanting the best for each other at the bottom of it. And we both always know that.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't mean that there aren't times that we get pissed off, but that's just part of the process. And we've learned to recognize that it's part of the process. And we know, okay, we're going through that period of time where, you know, we've argued about something and we're going to be pissed off for 24 hours or 20 minutes and then it's going to be fine again.
Well, and you write characters that, for the last two shows, Take Two and Castle, both have, I don't want to say couples because Take Two, they're not a couple as of yet, technically, but they're very much bicker. There's a lot of banter involved. Does that stem at all from you two as well, or is that just how you write?
It's from the two of us and also from the DNA of all those old movies that we love so much, the Thin Man series, mm-hmm. His Girl Friday, Billy Wilder movies, Preston Sturges movies, you know. So
some of it is us and some of it is just our aesthetic, the movies we love. You know, we both love really smart characters, really smart women, really smart men with different points of view. When you talk about, you know, Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy and all those great movies, that those two were each other's equal as sparring partners, and there was a great deal of respect there. It allows you to get away with a kind of fun, verbal back and forth. And, yeah, you know, we have that, too, from time to time, although we don't have a chance to rewrite and polish our scenes. So when we do it with each other, it's not as good as when we write it. But, yeah, you know, a lot of it just comes from what we gravitate towards aesthetically.
Well, Take Two is a fun show. I really hope if people haven't already watched it, they definitely find it and check it out. And you can catch up on past episodes on the ABC app as well as Hulu. But immediately, when you first watch it, you hit my Remington Steele moonlighting sweet spot, like that case of the week, charming leads, and Rachel and Eddie. Possible long-term connection, we don't know. Why was this the project that you wanted to tackle next?
Well, actually, we had just come off of Castle, and, mm-hmm. and we were taking a moment to think of what we were doing next. And we were approached by some folks because it was a point in time where Castle, Mentalist, and Bones were all going off the air, but there was this huge international market for these lighthearted shows, these shows that we love. Like you said, Remington Steele, Moonlighting, you know, the shows that we grew up with and that we really adored when we were kids. And they were really interested in serving the international market. And it was something that, you know, Terry and I had been talking about because the world's a very big place and there are, you know, billions of people who are watching content in brand new ways. So we were really interested in that, and, you know, there was a part of us that still had a little bit of an itch to scratch from, you know, leaving Castle at the end of season 7. And we had, they said, did you have anything in the same vein as Castle? And we said, well, we have something where, you know, the characters are kind of similar, but we think it's a different show, it's a different kind of fun.
It takes place in L.A., it's got a different feeling all around it, it's a little lighter weight.
And these guys got excited, and we got excited, and
we also knew that we had this very excited international audience who were really missing Castle because of social media. And people were saying, is there going to be anything else like it? And then a lot of people were telling us, well, everybody's looking for the next Castle, and we didn't really want to make the next Castle, but we wanted to make something in that vein.
Yeah, sort of a cousin of it. And, you know, we loved writing it. So we decided, why not give this a try and see what happens? And it's been a really interesting journey for us. We've met people all over the world. We've met these great folks in Europe who are part of our co-production. And so it's been a fantastic learning experience. But at the heart of it is Terry and I committing to and falling in love with these new characters, and not just Samantha Swift and Eddie Valetic, who are, we just love what Rachel Bilson and Eddie Cibrian have been able to bring to those roles, but also the family we've been able to build around them. Mm-hmm. Birdo and Monica and all the
Detective
other...
Detective Rollins. And Nick English.
Nick English, yeah, and Zeus.
The actors realizing the roles has been just so delightful.
Yeah, it's everybody's really meshing. I mean, you can tell it, like, every episode, I think, builds on the previous one. It gets better and better and better, which is exactly what you want in that kind of show.
Yeah. So really, it was all about, well, this is an interesting new adventure. Let's do this.
We like new adventures.
Yeah.
You know, we've done the kind of the straight broadcast model where you go in and pitch, and this was a new twist on it that we thought would be kind of fun.
Yep.
And how do you pick the leads for a show like this? Because we all know, I mean, that is going to sell everything that follows. How did you decide on Rachel and Eddie as the perfect couple? Not couple, but couple.
We've been fans of Rachel for a really long time. We thought she was wonderful in The OC and, really liked her in Heart of Dixie. And she is just so likable. She has just an enormous amount of charm.
And that she has the comedy and the drama chops, and we knew that she did.
Mm-hmm. And, we'd seen Eddie's work for quite a while, and we thought he was ready for a real moment. And what we wanted to do was give him a role that was meaty enough to take advantage of these great acting chops we had seen in a number of things that he had done and bring them together. But honestly, you never know. I mean, so much of this depends on chemistry. And, they're both at a stature where they don't necessarily read and stuff like that. So we were making these offers, and we closed on them, and we were really excited. But you don't know if you caught that lightning in a bottle.
Can they do? Will they have that electricity?
Will they have that spark?
Because we were so lucky on Castle. I mean, it wasn't just luck. But still, you find two people who have the chemistry, and it's magic.
So we got our director, and we did a little scene work, a little table read over at our house. And the first time we saw the two of them playing together, Terry and I were just grinning ear to ear.
We were. We were just so excited. We were bouncing up and down in our chairs.
Because those guys are great together. They're so much fun together. They talk about each other. So we saw in the room, and we got really excited. But you're right. It really is all about finding that magic in the casting. And it's a third hard work on the casting folks' part, putting the right people in front of you. And there's a third of it that is just incredible, incredible luck. And then there's a third of it that's just gut instinct on our parts of saying, okay, these two people are going to work together. We just feel it. But you have to have that part, that luck part, that it's all going to come together.
And right off the bat, your show makes fun of something that always drives me crazy, is the enhancing an image that it isn't a thing. And it's in every cop show. And everybody that's ever done anything with a computer that actually knows anything about it watches that going, you can't do that. You can't enhance 27 miles away and make the clear license plate. You just can't do it. So how did it feel for you guys to blow the whistle on every other detective show on TV? Because at this point, now they all know it's just all fake.
Well, that's part of the fun of these kind of shows is that, when you know a genre so well and it's so well established with the public knows all the tricks. And it's just fun to be a little meta and let your audience know that you know and put it in the characters' mouths and say and share the joke with the audience, really.
Do you as showrunners get as tired of some of the overdone tropes as fans do?
Yeah, we do, but we also understand them. It's 11 o'clock at night and you're shooting the next day and you're trying to solve a problem. Terry's brother is a criminal defense attorney, and he wonders why. He wondered why in Castle all the time we'd be interrogating people and never have their lawyer with them telling them to shut up. Oh, you got a confession out of him in two scenes. Oh, very good. That's not the way it works in real life. But no, we like having fun with the genre. I think that all procedurals have, you know, they lean on the same elements. And one of the things that we've always tried to do is figure out how to keep it fresh, how to have the unique piece of evidence or approach storytelling from a different way. But I think that audiences forgive it a little bit more in a show like Take Two because, you know, it's a little bit more character-oriented, it's a little bit more fun. You know, some of the stuff on CSI bordered on straight-out science fiction when they were dealing with some of their evidence.
But they took it very seriously. I mean, so you believed it. Mm-hmm.
But honestly, do we get tired of it? We have a great deal of respect for other writers and other showrunners. We know how hard the job of coming up with something new that the audience hasn't seen before is. So we actually are less critical than we would be if we were just, I think, an audience member sitting at home. There's a lot more forgiveness having gone through it ourselves.
Yeah. But when we watch other things, we know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah. Sure, we also know exactly the conversation that they had that led them to that series of events that they're putting on screen.
Yeah, so more respectful than tired of it.
And you've got a nice twist in this one because Sam Swift is an actress, and there are numerous pulls on acting and some of the pitfalls of celebrity as you go. And we know Rachel and Eddie have both been on successful projects before, as well as both of you. So is this where you pull those stories from, or is most of it just from years of being in the business and you're just kind of yanking, throwing those tropes in there as well?
I think it's from years of being in the business and knowing a lot of people and their stories and their experiences. And
some of our experiences on Castle, you know, working with some of the experts and the stories that come in that way. And, you know, specifically to Sam Swift, what it means, you know, what knowledge she might have from being on a show, which is, you know, some of it is absolutely correct and some of it is probably really, really wrong because, you know, on the procedural, you take the shortcut. You know, what do you mean we can't get the toxicology overnight? You know, that sort of thing. But we really like playing with those tropes and setting them up and poking fun at them and leaning on them from time to time.
Because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we use that's really accurate and that you actually can use in reality. And that was part of the fun of Sam, is that maybe some of her ideas came from the TV show or roles that she played, but some of them are from people that she worked with where she really learned how to do some of this stuff and she could be really helpful. Because, you know, in our mind, Sam Swift is a really smart lady and she did pick this stuff up and she does have knowledge.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a, I'm not a doctor, but I played one on TV. I'm not a cop, but I played one on TV. So you think you have the special skills. And to a certain extent, if you've lived in that world and you put on that persona, you know, you may actually know how to interrogate somebody when you've done 200 interrogations over the course of, you know, 10 seasons.
Yeah, what did Rachel say? She does know how to do a suture.
Yeah, she does. From Heart of Dixie, she knows how to suture somebody.
And you can look for that line coming up where she does say, I'm not a doctor, but I played one on TV. We actually put that in the show.
That's pretty funny. You bring up procedurals, and I guess I have a question. I've had this debate with many people where I feel like, you know, 5 years ago, maybe it's the Breaking Bad effect, I don't know, but 5 years ago, almost every show was a procedural. And 5 years later, you know, now, almost every show seems to be serialized. Like, it's for me, it's harder to find procedurals, which I like, because sometimes you just want a show where you can watch and not have to remember 400 episodes of backstory. You just want to be able to watch it and enjoy it, have fun with it, get a little bit of character building, but not too extreme. Did you get any pressure at this point with Take Two to try to make it a more serialized venture, or they were perfectly fine? Hey, we need fun procedurals on the air.
Well, actually, when Andrew was talking about our conversations with the international folks earlier, one of the things that they were looking for was episodic television, because they were missing it in some of the American shows that they were getting because people were going more towards the serialized stuff. So that was something that they wanted, and we actually think that there's room for all of those things because, first of all, how many? There's 500 scripted shows out there right now.
Yeah, there's a lot.
And it's nice to just, the difference between visiting a friend and saying, I'm staying for a week, or stopping by for coffee is really the difference between the episodic show and the serialized show. So You know, it just depends what you're in the mood for.
Yeah, and everything's cyclical. You know, there was a time when there were no comedies on TV because comedies didn't work, and now comedies are making a comeback. So everything's cyclical, and we feel like that there's still an audience out there who, you know, wants to check in and doesn't feel that pressure of once you start a serialized show, you got a lot of work to do, you know? Mm-hmm. The episodic, you can just come in and be taken care of for an hour.
Which doesn't mean that your characters don't grow and you can't follow a bit of a storyline, but we also think it's important to be able to just drop in any time and have that nice cup of coffee with your show. Glass of wine, whatever your poison is.
Well, you guys managed to walk that fine line. So, I mean, the characters have grown every episode, but it's not the extreme where we have to... See, I can watch episode 4 and probably be okay watching 3 after that one, where, you know, so many shows you can't do that anymore, which can be frustrating if you're a casual fan or you don't have time to binge everything every time. That's a
benefit. Yeah, it is nice to have that option. But, you know, look, some of the serialized shows, they're really great. So, as Terry was saying... The nice thing about Peak TV is that whatever kind of story you're trying to tell, there's a form for it now. It just means that we all have to get better, and we all have to have really good storytelling to survive in this climate.
One last thing on Take Two. How do you guys do the mysteries? I mean, every week you've got a different murder mystery or mystery of some type. How do you concoct your weekly mystery? How do you hatch it?
We have a great writer's room. And people with really wonderful ideas that are keeping their eye on current events or have had something happen to them in their lives. And we sit around the room and tell stories and come up with ideas and put it up on a whiteboard and try to break it down and create a mystery that the audience won't guess at right away, which is really hard to do. I mean, we all work really hard to try and make it entertaining and great guesswork for our audiences.
And then part of the work we do when people are pitching their ideas and we're pitching our own ideas and we're putting them up on the board is to have different kinds of shows every week, so you're not doing an abduction every week or you're not doing a murder every week. And you know, like our other show, Castle, you know, we like to have a wide tonal range. So, you know, you can have a creepy serial killer episode that has serious stakes, and then a week or two later, you can have them investigating an abduction that may have a UFO component to it. You know, you can go into the genre
well,
and the fun really,
really
quickly.
That sounds like something that happened just recently on television.
Sounds like something that's happening right now on our show. Yeah, but part of it is just having people pitch from their own experiences or having people pitch articles in the newspaper. Seeing what gains traction and what would be a good mystery for our two characters, because there are plenty of great mysteries out there, but they aren't necessarily ones that will give Sam and Eddie a conversation, something to talk about, something that will move their relationship forward.
Yeah, that's one of our big considerations, is what's the conversation between our main characters.
That's how we do it.
And is there any word yet on renewal, or are you still waiting to hear, or where are we at?
We haven't heard yet. We're happy that our ratings are steady, and fingers crossed that the TV gods smile on us.
We haven't premiered in Europe yet.
Yeah, this is a show with a significant international component. We're just premiering in Europe.
Wednesday? The 29th?
Yeah, the 29th. So we'll see how it goes there and how those audiences react.
I'm going to keep telling people as much as I can to check it out, because Take Two is a really, really fun show.
We appreciate that. Thank you. We've had a really great time doing it. It's been a really great adventure.
It's been a lot of fun. Is there anything you can tease or to leave people with so that they... How would you sell Take Two to someone who had never heard of it?
So we're looking at each other with questioning eyes saying, okay, who's going to answer that one?
It's a tough one.
It looks like Terry's about to jump in.
No, I had something, but it wasn't good enough.
So what I would say is, if you like procedurals and you love romantic comedy and fun banter and sparkling wit, the Take Two is really a show for you. It's about two wonderfully different characters working together, solving crimes from very different points of view and having a lot of fun along the way.
I thought that was great.
That's
perfect.
I like that.
You like that?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Good job.
I love how you guys compliment
And then, you know, we're about to hit the home stretch of the season. Well, let's just say we end with a bang. It's going to be very exciting.
Episode 112 is a lot of fun. It showed
super
sparkly, really fun, great
sparkly
episode.
Caper.
Yeah. It's a caper.
It's fun. It's a caper with a very sexy cat burglar who ends up catching Eddie's eye. And how does Sam feel about that? And there's a surprising conclusion to 112 that leads us to, you know, we start
the
113 with the real bang.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
That sounds great. Thanks so much, you guys, for coming on and doing this. I really, really do appreciate it.
Thanks. Well, we appreciate it.
We really appreciate your support.
Also, I just got to say, it's wonderful how you guys compliment each other, because usually people are talking when there's more than one person and they're talking all over each other. You guys are literally finishing each other's sentences and it's fluid.
We've had a lot of practice. We'll take it back.
Hurry. You're talking to me.
All right. Well, thank you and best of luck on the show. I really hope it gets renewed and I'm looking forward to more.
Thank you so much.
Take
nice
care.
To meet you. Nice to meet you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There you go, guys. I hope you enjoyed that. And it was really fun to talk to the creator and showrunners of Castle, as well as Take Two, and kind of talk about why they do what they do and how that worked. And Castle's a show that I've loved for many, many years. And Take Two is one that I found and really have latched on to, because it's really, I'm not just saying that. Seriously, it hits my sweet spot. Rachel and Eddie have a really good chemistry. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed this interview. We try to bring you interviews with filmmakers from the world of independent cinema or television when we can, so I really hope you enjoyed this one. Remember to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your app of choice. Our normal show has a new episode every week and is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com, as well as everything else I just mentioned. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater or sit comfortably on your couch and watch Take Two, buy popcorn.